with your Parliament Thursday, the 21st of December 2022. To the company Scandinavians, the anniversary of 2000. Madam Speaker, I would beg to move under Standing Order 7.3 to suspend Standing Order 7.1 in order to proceed with a government statement.
Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
Madam Speaker, I'm almost 2 months ago to start the general election that you so ably overheard. The current Chief Secretary wrote to me in relation to delicate personal circumstances that required him to spend more time with his family. Since then, I'm happy to report that the complicated status of the procedure under combat in Delta has guided hospital has been successful and that Gabriela is making a speedy recovery, something I'm sure everybody in this house will be delighted to hear. Notwithstanding the life throws you these circumstances, it really does make one think where your priorities lie and about the depth of time one has with the core family. I'm entirely empathize with Darren in that respect. Darren has therefore now asked me to step down from his role as Chief Secretary of His Majesty's Government of Gibraltar and propose for me a different pathway working in a supportive capacity in education and reporting directly to me on a number of initiatives which can only be interpreted as actually to benefit from Gibraltar. Given Darren's experience in the field, I have wholeheartedly agreed to it, believing he has earned the right to determine his better future. Principle of social determination goes to the core of everything we do in this field. I received Darren from the Department of Education following his sterling work in transforming the student landscape and having observed his innate ability in dealing with people and investing in them. I must remark at this stage that he initially declined the offer to become Chief Secretary and eventually acceded after immense insistence from me. As usual, Madam Speaker, you are making an offer he couldn't refuse, and I had a horse's head within his bed that took that level of persuasion. He put the greatest good of Gibraltar, as I expressed it, to him over and above his love of education. During his 6 years as Chief Secretary, Darren's contribution has been exceptional despite certain unpredictable events having taken center stage, and it's already been ready to put the service transformation journey that we have embarked upon together. Brexit and COVID challenges have to fail, and we need both at the top of our respective parts of the administration has to deal with that. It took a pandemic toll, and yet the civil service rose up to the occasion with a sterling leadership and opposite guidance from Darren. We are now back on track. Darren prepared to realize what was needed to take the service to the next level in terms of building team capacity with a number of significant others who possess the right skills to take towards forward. Darren has been selfless in this respect and has always put the good of Gibraltar first and foremost. I thank him here today for his sterling service to Gibraltar and for all members in this House will agree. His last day as Chief Secretary will be the 31st of December 2023. Member Speaker, given Darren's decision to step down, it is incumbent on me to appoint a new Chief Secretary. As the House will know, the post of Chief Secretary, Chief Technical Officer and Financial Secretary, as well as our representatives overseas, are the Chief Minister's directly appointed positions. Given I have announced that I will be stepping down in coming years, I think it is essential and of greatest interest that I should appoint someone who will hold the office for longer than the time I will be in post. It is for that reason that I have spoken as a person to a post who will transition from one Chief Minister to another. Given the qualities he represents and the longevity he can give to the post, I have made the easy decision to appoint Glendon Martina to the post of Chief Secretary as from the 1st of January 2024. Glendon possesses the extensive experience in both the public and private sector which is needed to do this job. As a former CEO of an international business specializing in e-commerce, sales, and managing a large team, he brings a wealth of knowledge from beyond the civil service. He recently joined the public service to spearhead the modernization of the Royal Gibraltar Post Office. Under his guidance, the department has seen numerous successes from the digitization of mail, next day delivery services, and the first postal service in the world with a full electric heated vehicle, something definitely to be proud of. You can't even come in an Irish town, is the only problem. Subsequently, he was appointed head of the Driver and Vehicle Licensing Department. And in this year, he successfully managed the digitization of services again, eradicating the backlog caused by the lockdown and achieved record low waiting time. At this point, Glendon played a pivotal role in assisting the Gibraltar Maritime Administrator. He helped promote Gibraltar from leading the enzyme flag for international ships post-Brexit, significantly increasing turnover in that department. His efforts including implementing reasoning initiatives, revising fees, and improving working practices. After achieving those objectives, I, along with the Chief Secretary, recruited him to come and work on the book. That was in 2019, I think, before. There he has been instrumental in assisting the Chief Secretary in writing. His work includes overseeing and continuously enhancing various departments within the civil service and leading negotiations with key stakeholders such as unions, business organizations, and private entities collaborating with the government. I'm confident that Brendan will be an exceptional head of the civil service. His experience at the core of government and his leadership abilities make him ideally suited to this vital role, especially in the context of modernizing the civil service. I look forward to seeing Brendan flourish in his new role and the public sector flourish with him as its head. I do worry, though, Mr. Speaker, Madam Speaker, that I can now count on the fingers of one hand those at number six who are older than me. I commend this to Mr. Grant. Madam Speaker, if you would, I'd like to welcome, thank the Chief Minister for having given me advance notice of the statements which I received earlier today. It's a statement in two parts. So, first of all, on behalf of members on this side of the House, certainly we wish Darren Greck well in his new task. Whatever they may be in the roles that are going to be assigned to him, perhaps more granularly in the area of education or in other tasks which the government has discussed with him. We are certainly glad that the medical circumstances that the Chief Minister has described in his statement went well for him and his family. We're very happy about that. Entirely understand, of course, that people reach personal decisions in life and careers and so on, and sometimes events happen that make them reflect on why things should be as they are or as they thought they should always be, and that makes them take other personal decisions. We certainly understand that, and of course, for someone who has, as a career civil servant, reached the pinnacle of the administrative civil service, as was the case with Darren Greck, who became Chief Secretary despite his passion in education and his wish to perhaps continue in that role. I think it's when you're thrust into the role of Chief Secretary, it's a role which is a wide role with huge responsibility for thousands of people, and indeed for the stewardship of an administrative civil service and the public service in many aspects that are hugely important for Gibraltar, and certainly on this side of the House, we thank him for his work, especially in the last few years, of course, because there have been very significant challenges to the community which Mr. Greck has been at the heart of in his role as Chief Secretary. So certainly on this side of the House, we thank him for that work. In relation to the appointment of the new Chief Secretary, of course, as the Chief Minister says, these are appointments within the gift of the Chief Minister, and we certainly accept that. I will ask this in terms of clarification. I don't know Mr. Martinez personally, so I will ask him this, if I may, because I only know of Mr. Martinez and his role primarily because it's linked to the press. Because he did have a sort of fairly public role within the Philippine Bureau, then became, the head of that, which is ARM, the Postal Services. I'm aware, of course, that he also had a role in the driving, in the licensing entity. But he was, I think, doing interviews in relation to Postal Services until fairly recently. So I don't know of his role beyond that, although I was aware that he was at number six and assisting in that regard because I've seen a recent letter written by him. So what I would ask, though, because I don't know Mr. Martinez, is clarification on whether Mr. Martinez is a civil servant and if he's not a civil servant, if he's a public servant in the sort of wider context of that meaning of that word, which is the entity in the public service that is the direct employer right now, which is HMDC, is it another entity, perhaps which we can clarify that, and if he is not a civil servant, right, not if he is or is not, but if he is not a civil servant, is he going to be seconded into that role, if secretary qua the entity that employs him, or is he now being transferred into a civil service? And if that is the latter of the case, then we've been discussing with the GCA on issues in relation to that. In any event, beyond that case of clarification, of course, our members on this side of the House wish him well in that role. It's a difficult role, I'm sure, and certainly we hope that in the years to come, because the Chief Minister has not told us who goes, but has suggested that Mr. Martinez is younger than him. In the years to come in the public service, we hope he will have a fruitful career. Madam Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Member for his remarks in particular. As he's very generous remarks to Diane Greck, who deserves nothing else. Madam Speaker, let me start at the end of the rest of what the legal division said. Diane Greck for the civil servant and Diane Martino for the civil servant, and therefore, are there any issues about the convent or otherwise? I would say that apart from the work that he has continued to do in respect of postal services, the department he no longer leads, but he continues to influence positively, that he has been at number 6.8, I believe, now since 2018, assisting the current chief secretary with his work in leading the civil service and the public sector more generally. And therefore, Madam Speaker, I believe that given I think he's in his mid-40s, he has a good long stretch ahead of him, leading the administrative part of the government much longer than I know I have, leading the political part of the government. One thing I would definitely say to the Honourable Gentleman, if you want to get to know him better, I used to see him coming down from the upper rock at 6:30 in the morning when I was going up. So I think about 4:00 to 6:00, you get to the top every day without an electric bike. I commend that to him.
Any other members to ask any questions?
Chief Minister's question number 757, the Honourable A. Sanders.
So the government said it was this name of the number of consultants engaged by the co-agent government during the court meeting for 1st of April 2017 to do, inclusive of the purpose of the services and a total cost of consultant engagement.
Answer, Honourable the Chief Minister. Madam Speaker, I'm advised that the co-agent has engaged 3 consultants on the 1st of April 2017 to date. The purpose of these services are to train, coach, and mentor the development of safeguarding policy and procedures and to provide guidance on positive behaviour support. They perform assessment review, provide supervision to staff, and offer recommendations. In total, from 2017 to date, we have paid one consultant of £4,632, a second consultant £70,832, and a third consultant £30,737. The Ministry of Equality has not engaged any consultants directly. It's the 1st of April 2017, Madam Speaker. I am asking this question because it cuts across different portfolios.
Regarding the application of
The Honourable legal definition, which is to ask a further question to me from a standing position, but I'm not sure if you're addressing England from a sedentary position, so I can understand that.
I didn't have a question. I was just saying to the Honourable Member on an aesthetic on the sedentary position that I wasn't. We weren't speaking the standing word of publication.
Question
759, Honourable Inspector.
Does the government support the introduced to Carol Bernard?
Answered, Honourable the Chief Minister. Madam Speaker, carers are employed under different types of contracts within the GOP, ERF, the Care Agency and other departments, agencies and authorities. Some may enjoy allowances depending on the nature of the employment contract they have entered into.
Madam Speaker, just to answer, what I would mean by the Care Grant is Care Grant as the, they know that it exists in the UK for people that have to take a break or step away from their work commitment because they have to care for a member of their family. And I thought they might face financial hardship because of this, and they receive an allowance from the state to be able to do this. And I wanted to, they have plans to introduce a similar allowance here locally.
And Madam Speaker, a similar issue is under consideration by the government.
Next question.
Question 760, the Honourable Diego. Madam Speaker. Can the government confirm whether the immigrant provided an update on the progress made in resolving the staffing issues that have affected the running of the airport? Answer, the Honourable Chief Minister. Madam Speaker, yes, ma'am. Can we ask what information has been given to the government in relation to those issues and how they've been resolved? Well, Madam Speaker, we are satisfied that the Ministry of Defence has working with NAT has now ensured that this is no longer be an issue, although it takes 2 years to train or control it, and of course, if we had a widespread issue with illness, it could cause us a problem, but the issue has been managed very successfully since the summer, and I would say that the government extends its gratitude to the NAT controllers, the support personnel who have continued to make great pressing efforts and challenging circumstances that the summer onwards to ensure that the airport has sustained operation. So the Chief Minister is satisfied from the information given to the government that those staffing issues will not reoccur and won't lead to disruption of the airport again. Only as far as possible, and I'm speaking on the basis of the information I have been provided.
Question
761, the Honourable Jerry Webster.
Madam Speaker, can the government, can the Honourable Minister confirm that mental health support is offered by government to personnel within the following departments: the Devoted Ambulance Service, the Royal Devoted Police, the Devoted Fire and Rescue Service, the Devoted Prison Service, the Magistrates Customs Devoted, the Devoted Border and Coast Guard Agency, and the Devoted Court Service?
Madam Speaker, I can confirm that mental health support is offered by the government to personnel within the department sensing breaking down thoroughly for emergency services and for other first responders. The trauma risk management policy was implemented to identify personnel who may need additional welfare support in early stage and sample when is necessary. Typically, the Gibraltar Authority Ambulance Service, the Royal Gibraltar Police, the Gibraltar Fire and Rescue Service, different prison service, patient customs, and the Gibraltar Border and Coast Guard Agency. The following departments have internal welfare officers and well-being champions to offer additional support to the staff. The Gibraltar Ambulance Service, the Royal Gibraltar Police, the Gibraltar Fire and Rescue Service, and the HM Prison Service. For all officers in the public service, the employee well-being and support team is also available to offer welfare support and the necessary liaison with other agencies to provide further professional support. that personal health services are also made available for personnel to have access to practitioners. The personal health reports are used by management in order to determine how best to support the employees.
Next question.
Question 762, Yanagul Island 20.
Can we then to ground if it is abandoned the principle of index linking or government occupational pension as that there are assessments that the pension increase up 1973?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Well, Madam Speaker, there is no such thing to this.
Well, Madam Speaker, I would respectfully suggest the rules provision under Section 6 for increasing by index linking to the extent that Madam Speaker has been a post-life retired civil servant who have had expectations of index linked increases in the pension. And the reason of Section 6, which I won't bore the house with, makes repeated references to the RPI index increases by right to rise. There was an amendment to the Act. Section 6 2A, which effectively said the increase there must be less than 2%. There must be less than 2%. And I do recognize that there is a conditionality to mention I'm sorry about giving a preamble, but the minister said no. There is a presumption that it's either 2% or RPI. Now, I recognize there is the word no. What I'm asking the government is the government abandoning the concept of any increase in relation to retail price index? And by way of explanation, retail price index increase for 2023 in the year 5.5, 22 was 8.9, and 21 was 2.4. And the Chief Minister in his budget address of 2023 said it would increase by 2%. But there is provision on the Section 6. RPI index increases, I'm asking whether the government would abandon that principle entirely. The Section 2.4 of my understanding was a fair, not a choice.
Well, Madam Speaker, we've gone from a principle to a concept and back to a principle. And the Honourable Gentleman simply glosses over the reference in the statement to the word that implies choice, not requirement. If it was a requirement, because there was a principle that the pension, the occupational pension, would go up by an index-linked amount, then the statute, which we referred to, which was done in 1973, would refer to shall and not to may. In fact, it refers to may in both Section 6.1, which was the section passed in 1973, and thereafter, Madam Speaker, the shall is in 2A that sets the floor. And the Honourable Member cares to look at these increases, and he will see that in many instances, occupational pensions in the civil service went up by much more than inflation. And nobody was complaining. So when inflation was 0.2% and public sector pensions went up by 2%, nobody complained. Yet when inflation is 8.9% and the increase in the pension is 2%, there are complaints. But the Honourable Gentleman seems to forget that in that year, although by operation of the statute, which is in that sense requiring of the government to increase by at least 2%, public sector salaries did not go up at all. So the Honourable Gentleman is advocating that public sector pensioners with occupational pensions should have an increase in excess of the 2% that the law provides, even when public sector workers get less than 2% or nothing. And so, Madam Speaker, I do not accept that there is a principle because there is a specific legal provision, not a principle, that sets out the options for the government. I address that specifically in my budget speeches, in particular this year, I believe, and therefore, Madam Speaker, my view is that if public sector workers, the people who are behind your care and throughout Gibraltar, working in the Gibraltar public sector, have been without a pay rise, they have an amount which was not connected to salary, which was a one-off payment, which was tax-free, but they haven't had a percentage increase. Then it would be unfair for public sector occupational pension holders to have in excess of the amount that the law provides that they must have. So there is no principle, there is no concept, there is a clear legal provision which the government is abiding by, which the government addressed in the last budget in order to explain why things are going up by 2% rather than by 5.5 or 8.5. I know it's not grateful to the Chief Minister for setting out this understanding of that section. But I'm asking, is there then any scenario in which steward and visiting government would apply the RPI provision?
I'm not. I'm just going to interject. I think that's a hypothetical question.
Well, Madam Speaker, the problem is that he's saying there's a rule so this is within 2%.
It's a hypothetical question, but on whatever basis it's promised. And I think we've had the answer to your question, so we'll move on to the next question.
Question 763, the Honourable Alan Clinton. And then the Speaker, can we get into whether there's any intention to regulate the use of artificial intelligence in the world. I'll put the end of the difference there. And I'll put the rest of it. I'm quite grateful for that, yes. Would the Chief Minister also elaborate as to what approach the government is thinking of taking? Is the government considering the issue of a consultation process? I'm almost minded to tell the Honourable Gentleman that I shall ask ChatGPT what the answer should be. This is an issue that has to be dealt with in consultation. Like the Chief said, it will be a consultation across the business and services that the government provides and across other departments. For example, there are issues in relation to financial services, there are issues in relation to health, there are issues that will affect all of the departments in the context of artificial intelligence, and therefore, this is a very wide consultation. The European Union has recently adopted legislation. It's the first entity to have adopted legislation on artificial intelligence, and the United Kingdom is using under the Bletchley Park principle to try and establish a global standard. And I was very grateful to the Chief Minister for his most impressive answer. I certainly even the Pope would expect that the artificial intelligence should be regulated. Can I ask the Chief Minister if we have a time frame in mind? Not at this stage. Question 764, the Honourable Alan Clinton. Madam Speaker, can we go to advise when it returns to amend the public services rendered in 1998 to allow for a motion investigation? Answer, the Honourable Chief Minister. Madam Speaker, the government will advise when it intends to amend the public services rendered in 1998 to allow for a motion investigation when it is ready to do so. Madam Speaker, I may remind the Chief Minister he actually prepared a motion in December 2019 resolving that the act should be used to enable the Office of Public Service to launch investigations of its own motion. And as we read the end of the report for 2022, he will see quite apparently the request for a motion investigation. So I would ask the Chief Minister, does he have a more specific time frame in mind? Bear in mind that this has obviously been a subject that has been discussed for well over 4 years. No, ma'am.
Next question.
Question 765, the Honourable Alan Clinton.
other speakers on the government square about who pays for the cabinet convention or the ministers who attended the 2023 Bank of the Year Awards in London. After the end of the Chief Minister, I'd like to speak at the expenses were met by TNT Global Foundation as part of their invitation to the event. No cost were incurred by the taxpayer. Given that the government issued a press release on APC 2.0.4, can we begin to confirm that both he and the Minister for Financial Services were on official government business?
And I think there's a rule that says that one is not required to. That it was improper for a question to seek confirmation of anything in a government press report.
The rule is that, as I understand it, that there should be no questions as to whether anything that was in a press report was accurate. Is that the basis of your question? If not, perhaps you can clarify.
Sure, in other words, I think I only just go that question by way of background, not by way of asking for confirmation of the accuracy of the statement. Those who visit to this event, official government
business. Well, Madam Speaker, the government and Peter were not invited. The Chief Minister and the Minister for Finance and Services in Gibraltar were invited.
Madam Speaker, in which case, given the conditions of the Ministerial Code, will Chief Minister be minded to make a reference to the independent advisor? Or would appear to be a breach of the Municipal Code of Section 10.4, in which hospitality should never be accepted for official government business.
Madam Speaker, more than that, I wrote to the Chief Secretary and asked him for guidance on how we should deal with the way that the costs were incurred, and he is dealing with the issue.
Madam Speaker, I'm glad to hear that. That process has been undertaken, and wouldn't you be able to advise whether the House will be given the results of the Chief Minister's deliberation? And I would have expected.
Well, Madam Speaker, as far as I know, those of you who are internal issues in relation to the register that the Honourable Gentleman can ask, and if you ask somebody who has been determined, then he'll be told what it is that the determination has been. But I'm very surprised that he thinks it would have been a good idea for us to pay our way when this was an event we attended in order to support a Gibraltar operator and financial services. It is a common ownership of that bank and the old Gibraltar Bank, now the TNG Bank and TNB Bank in Gibraltar. And therefore, we were happy to go to support the Gibraltar Institution. We didn't think it could be funded by the taxpayer, neither did the institution suggest it could be funded by the taxpayer. They thought it could be funded by them because we were intending to support them, Madam Speaker. And I think that's something difficult to understand that the Honourable Gentleman wants to save care costs, but wants to save costs. I would have thought it would have been entirely on our side on this.
Madam Speaker, I didn't like Minister O'Kerr, he did.
Of course I do, and if I didn't, I would have written to the Chief Secretary to ask him to resolve the issue that arose in respect of the code long before the Honourable Gentleman asked his question.
Question
766, the Honourable Alan Clinton. And then, the can we then provide why Gibraltar Properties Limited has borrowed £80 million from the Gibraltar Savings Bank as of the 1st of September 2023?
I'll take the end of the Chief Minister. Madam Speaker, I will answer with questions 767 and 768.
Question 767, the Honourable Alan Clinton. Madam Speaker, can we then provide the Gibraltar Properties Limited Properties Limited has provided any funding to Aruka Investments Limited under the liquidity agreement as of 30th September 2023, and if so, to what amount?
Question 768, the Honourable Alan Clinton.
standard enterprises, diversity properties limited, is providing any balance towards any of these government affordable housing schemes. Answer, the Honourable Chief Minister. Madam Speaker, the £80 million borrowed by Gibraltar Properties Limited has been used for the construction cost of a thousand human charities. Gibraltar Properties Limited is not providing any funding to Aruba Investments Limited. Gibraltar Properties Limited has only provided funding towards a thousand human charities and no other affordable housing scheme. And I think the record should be answered. The amount that has been borrowed from Gibraltar Savings Bank has been increasing regularly over the past 2 years, certainly. My understanding was, in fact, the Chief Minister concurred with my board, was the Eureka structure was going to be funding at the end of the new policy. I believe the number is about £160 million will discuss at the time. Is it that the Eureka structure has proved insufficient in providing the funding requirement? Is it 80 million for the old envisage that you reported 80 million from the same effect? So it's not my recollection. Why is it that you have to resort to the same effect to borrow the 80 million?
Well, I don't know how many questions he's asked in the context of that, but I want to let me just tell him that in the same period that he's referring to the increase in borrowing from the savings bank, the deposits in the savings bank have also increased quite exponentially. And I was speaking, he may not recall it, but we did tell him that at different times, when we were at the peak period of the bill, we would require to borrow more money in order to be able to fund the development costs at peak times. That's what happened to us.
Can I ask whether, is this 80 million, is it going towards, or some of it going towards the additional cost of consumption? I remember the Chief Minister will recall questions before the last general election where it was clear that the consumption would cost about 30 million more than envisaged because of the circumstances that were described before the last general election. Is part of this 30 million going towards that, or is it going towards a higher sum, which is also due to additional expenditure on that development?
Madam Speaker, it's impossible to break down which business is paid with which pound. It's going to the general overall cost of a South African Jersey.
I think I've got a second one here. My last question is whether the financing to any other government affordable housing fee. Is it a good wish that, for example, Bethel Eastwick and the other consumers, for example, which are the government affordable housing schemes, will be effectively funded by the Board of Property, but in the same way, drawing financing from the Board of Savings Bank?
It's difficult to take a view on that respect.
Next question.
Question 769, the Honourable Benito Vietnam.
Madam Speaker, what is the new basic entry point and end point in the pay scale agreed with bus driver employees of the Gibraltar Bus Company?
Answer, the Honourable Chief Minister.
Madam Speaker, the answer is 770.
Question 770, the Honourable Leader of the Opposition.
What is the percentage increase in the new basic hourly rate of pay agreed with employees of the Gibraltar Bus Company?
Answer, the Honourable Chief Minister.
As a speaker, the new and basic entry point and end point on the pay scale agreed with bus driver employees of the Gibraltar Bus Company is at entry 23,098 pounds per annum and at end point 28,860 pounds per annum. Agreement was reached with the driving grades of the Gibraltar Bus Company on a new payment structure consisting of £12 per hour for drivers with 1 year's experience at the bus company, £14 per hour for drivers with 2 to 5 years experience with the bus company, 15 hours per hour for drivers with 6 years' worth of experience in over at the bus company. At no stage of this negotiated percentage increase, but an approximation to the pay and pay structure of publicly owned relevant UK bus services, the application of the parity principle and the extant parity agreement between the government and the United Union, as with the special entitled the Council and General Workers Union. When we write the difference of percentage terms between the entry median and endpoint of the old best cell curve, when compared to the entry median and endpoint of the new growth structure, is A at entry 6.56%, B at median 12.32%, and ending endpoint being 11.5% higher. Differential between driving growth with chart handling and sectors is expected. This equated to a percentage increase across the salary bound of chart handling sectors of 11.5%, resulting in an hourly rate at the entry, median, and endpoint of £15 per hour at entry, £17 per hour at median, and £19.28 per hour at the endpoint.
Can I ask what was the date of the agreement of the new arrangements, and what's the effective date of the agreement, meaning when the implementation date, if it's a different date?
So, Madam Speaker, the negotiations started sometime, I think, in the summer, and it ended before the general election, but the application of these new salary scales, I think, have commenced perhaps in November, I think, okay, no earlier than that.
Question 771, the Honourable, the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you, Speaker. Has the government now signed agreements with the developers of the toll fees, and if so, what are its main terms?
After, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
No, Speaker, the government has not yet signed agreements with the toll fee developers. Negotiations continue. Madam Speaker, it won't sound repetitive to you, but it will sound repetitive to the Chief Minister, as I ask this question every few months. And whereas, as the Chief Minister knows, almost the census spread in the 2019 manifesto, there had been a press release in April 2019 with graphic pictures showing beautiful views of a new scheme called the Toro Key. We were told that there were negotiations that were ongoing. We have been asking this question for often during the last term of Parliament. We seem to be no further along. Can the Chief Minister give us an idea of why these discussions are taking this long, given that there was a very big announcement by the government made almost 4.5 years ago? Well, Madam Speaker, 2 years were lost to COVID. A number of other months have been lost to the preparation of wage studies and the like, which are relevant to the final view as to what can be developed, which will be relevant to the final view of what can be agreed. Additionally, as honourable gentlemen may know, you may also have read somewhere that there will be issues with taking level to stay, so the government will be using the level itself to create a reformation to the west of Cayman Island. And the principal reason for doing the tourism development with the initial developers was to have their assistance in the moving of rubble from the east side. Then we sold the east side to the TNG Foundation, and we sold the rubble also, so that rubble is no longer available for that purpose. And so there have been many, very many, and as the honourable gentleman will understand, in West Latin, they just have to think of the elements which have interfered to make it impossible for us to move more quickly. And one issue that arises now that perhaps the scheme that was launched in, or announced in 2019, no longer possible because of discussions that have been had with the MOD or objections from that entity. No, that is because anything that came from the result of that is fake. But in terms of height and density and all of those issues are still on the table and unaffected by any discussions that have been in the energy, is that right? That's absolutely right, Madam Speaker. And that being so, then is it the government's position that it is still committed to the scheme that was announced back in April 2019, and what is really outstanding now is
these commercial discussions with the developers of the Cherokee. Is that the issue?
My secret is this is what the government is negotiating in the best interest of the taxpayer, that which is in our view in the public interest of the developer. That may mean that we don't have an agreement with the developers if we cannot reach one that we consider is in the public interest. What we would like to do is to reach that agreement and to deliver as close to that scheme as possible and include there things which are in our view in the public interest of the developer.
For 772, the only vote the legal representation.
Madam Speaker, if the government is part of a treaty on a new relationship, for it to work with the EU, prepared to return the issues not mentioned in the new legal agreement, and if so, what such issues are being discussed within the negotiations apart from the use of the Gibraltar Airport?
Answer, the only vote the Chief Minister.
Madam Speaker, right to 772.
Question 773, the Honourable Leader of Opposition.
Will the Chief Minister update the House on the latest rounds of talks towards a possible treaty for a new relationship with Gibraltar with the European Union?
Answer, the Honourable Chief Minister.
Madam Speaker, the latest official round of treaty negotiations took place in London last week. We continue alongside the United Kingdom to work with colleagues in the EU and Spain to seek to finalise all outstanding issues as soon as possible. The return of the Spain government in Spain and Gibraltar has enabled work to start again from where it was left off, and with a very positive outlook that seeks technical and practical solutions for the world only of the relevant parties having to see them fundamentally. And as speaking with respect to the detail being discussed in the negotiations, the Honourable Member will understand that I am unable to publicise any of the details being discussed, as the detail will undoubtedly prejudice this opposition. I would, however, add that we are, of course, taking matters beyond the New Year's Agreement, as that was a framework and not the treaty itself. Although it did mention the possibility, if not the necessity, of an agreement on the airport in Clause 17. That is therefore not entirely new. Additionally, by Clause 24, there is an option to address other areas of mutual interest.
Madam Speaker, can I start with this? The Honourable Member has talked about the formal round in London, and he made public today that there was. Perhaps discussions at a different level, less formal perhaps, in Madrid yesterday. Can the Chief Minister perhaps explain to us the context of that and whether those were technical talks of a different nature?
So, no, it was made public today, it was made public yesterday. So, there was a government press release yesterday saying that the Honourable Deputy Minister and I were in Madrid. Those discussions are not between the European Commission and the United Kingdom, though between officials between the United Kingdom, Gibraltar and Spain, trying to address issues of principle rather than issues relating to treaty negotiations, which are between the UK and the EU.
Madam Speaker, can I just ask on the question 772, your member says he doesn't want to talk about the detail of what is being discussed as not to prejudice the position in the talks, and of course I would not want him to do so, in other words, to prejudice the position of Gibraltar in the talks, but it appears that his question about not talking about what should or shouldn't be part of the discussions not shared by other participants, because the Spanish Foreign Minister has been quite open about his aspirations about including the airport as part of the ambit of the New Year's Eve agreement. Can I just ask him, is the government prepared to contemplate an agreement that does include terms in relation to the constitution of the effort?
Madam Speaker, I don't think that it's fair that the Honourable Gentleman should say that he is hearing more from the Spanish Foreign Minister than he is from us. We have confirmed on a number of occasions that we have a discussion in relation to the airport. We haven't confirmed the details of that. Indeed, he will also have heard it from James Cleverly, and he's heard it from David Gallen, he's heard it from David Steele. I don't think it's only for some of our others who has said that we are trying to determine whether it is possible to reach an arrangement in respect of the opening of Gibraltar Airport to EU flights, even though we left the European Union. question. And can I ask him to perhaps comment on time scale, which I appreciate may be a thorny subject because that there is an expectation and a, I think a desire for news on this issue, and indeed senior people have been commenting on time scales, not least to Westminster 11, when we expressed the hope that there would be some kind of breakthrough by Christmas. Given that we are a few days away from that seasonal break, what can he say about the likelihood of a breakthrough in the next few months, especially given the prospective dissolutions of the European Parliament, the prospect of UK elections, and so on?
But, Madam Speaker, I need to go back a moment to his earlier comments and remind him, which I didn't in my response, that Clause 17 of the New Year's Eve Agreement specifically talks about air transport. So we told the world on the 31st of December 2020 that we were looking at the airport. Hopefully, the government, I confirmed on television and I think on the printed media in Gibraltar that I still very much would wish to see an agreement as soon as possible. I wish to see an agreement before last Christmas, and I would like to see an agreement before this Christmas. I would like to see an agreement. But what I want to do is to give a right agreement. So I don't care whether I do it on the 25th of December in the morning, or on the 31st of June before the European election happens, or whatever date it may be. I believe it's the right agreement for Gibraltar, as I told you, able to have it consistently in the lifetime already of the Parliament and in the lifetime of the previous Parliament. What I'm not going to do is to set up a clock that will tick a bit up in the negotiation. So I'm not going to say if it's not done by X, it can't be done, because that is a rip that will stop the cut of our throat, and therefore I'm not going to be drawn on timescales. I'm going to be drawn only on the sections, and when the sections is right, that's when we do the agreement. Now, whoever doesn't think of a desire for news or a desire to know, no one has more than ever desire to give all the information and to explain why we think that the treaty we made have the opportunity of laying before the people of Gibraltar. If both are secure and beneficial for the people of Gibraltar, then the Deputy Chief Minister and me, and I'm sure all my cabinet colleagues. But we're not going to be pushed in the direction of making any announcement if the time is not right. Now, what I ask the gentleman to do, despite that he has eloquently termed is the curiosity that there is, to not permit curiosity to allow the Gibraltar cap to be caught. We've got to ensure that we play with a straight back. We continue to be very optimistic that we can get there, but we don't want to say more at this stage, and we don't want to be drawn on time scales. For good reason. And if he was sitting where I am sitting, he would do the same thing. The Chief also knows that, of course, we ask these questions because they are questions of public interest, but he knows that we do. Beyond all this, give him sufficient political space to conduct his negotiations. Can I just ask him, finally on this question, when he talked about the possibility of an agreement, are we still talking about an agreement of principles, and that what would be announced are those principles, but not the treaty itself, because that would still require work beyond those principles? Are we still, in other words, is the negotiation still about those unblocked of principles? Madam Speaker, we are talking about a negotiation for a treaty between the United Kingdom and the European Union, which is being conducted between the United Kingdom and Gibraltar and the European Union. And as the gentleman knows, and I have told him in the past, and I think said in the context of my earlier answer, the negotiation which will be going on between the United Kingdom, Gibraltar, and Spain on other issues which are not resolved in the New Year's Eve Agreement, which we would also like to see resolved, and which may then also make their way into the treaty negotiations. So this is continuing at many levels and many planes, and we hope to get all of them to align in time to announce the treaty in time. It may be we're able to make announcements about some part of arrangements or agreements being done, and not about others at a particular stage, or we may be able to announce everything at the same time. I don't want to be drawn on anything which can be turned into something that I then have to deliver against, because if I have to deliver against something in particular, a timescale or a principle, then the
other side will know that they've got me on that time scale because I have to deliver against it. That's why setting people's interest but using more will set ourselves up against the clock that can work against us.
I
think I have the honor to table the answers to the questions W6 2023 to W68 of 2023.
Word of the day, government nation. Where are you the truth is.
Madam Speaker, I have the honor to move the following resolution. That this House approve by resolution pursuant to Section 46 of the Social Security Open Long Term Benefit Scheme Act 1997, the making of the Social Security Open Long Term Benefit Scheme Amendment to Benefit Order 2023. Madam Speaker, as the House is aware, this is a motion that has to come before annually. Members will get the content of the bill previously approved by the House in December 2022. However, it was never subsequently published in the Gazette. The draft order contains the same substance as the one previously approved by the House, but with a new title on it by myself as the Deputy Minister for Social Security. Madam Speaker, I also beg to move that the House approved by resolution pursuant to Section 46 of the Social Security Open Long-Term Benefit Scheme Act 1997, the making of the Social Security Long-Term Benefit Scheme Amendment of Benefit Order 2023. This order seeks to amend the Social Security Open Long-Term Benefit Scheme Act 1997 by increasing the rates of old age pensions and survivor benefit by 7% with effect from the 1st of August 2023, and which represents the annual increase. In order to persuade the House to do that, Madam Speaker, I'm going to give notice of an amendment to the motion to include those references which I will pass now. I'm sorry I wasn't able to pass it earlier because the House has just heard I was not in Gibraltar yesterday. This is the written notice of the amendment that I beg to move, which will be circulated to all honourable members now, and which will include the new word, which I'm happy to speak to when I have that feedback. So, the amendment, Madam Speaker, will be to substitute the motion as it is with the following words. That this House approved by resolution pursuant to Section 46 of the Social Security Open Long Term Benefits Scheme Act 1997, the making of the Social Security Open Long Term Benefits Scheme Amendment to Benefits 2022 Order 2023, and the Social Security Open Long Term Benefits Scheme Amendment to Benefits Order 2023. And I beg to move that amendment, Madam Speaker, and will circulate the question.
I'd like to vote to move the question in terms of the amendment moved by the Honourable. Alright, so I'm now going to propose the question in terms of the amendment moved by the Honourable the Chief Minister. Yes, what is before, start with the amendment as moved by the Honourable the Chief Minister, and then after that we'll move on to the final motion as amended. Do you speak to the amendment now?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I recognize what the Chief Minister has said. I'm not sure this amendment to the motion will cure the omission because the motion was already passed by the House in December 2022. There already is a motion passed by the House approving that the long-term open benefit scheme should be amended. And that had a kind of said, of the 22nd December 2022, in which the motion was carried, although that has not happened, is that the act itself has not been amended by the Gazette. So, not sure if adding another motion will cure the missing of the Gazette and the amendment to the act. It's important, I think, because the wording of the Gazette that was attached to the original motion by Chief Minister makes reference to amending section 2.2, which specifically references section 22A of the Act, which is one member for another. And we do this as it is now. The substitution will work because that number didn't exist in the Act of Living Scheme that has been with 7.67 increase already. So I don't know whether the correct way or the way to do it is to go back to the missing legislation relating to that 2022 and proceed with this motion on the basis that there will be the law projected. I get the reason in which you make your thinking on this is that I'm not sure that simply passing motions twice will cure the problem in respect of last year.
Madam Speaker, the government's role is advice is contrary to what the Honourable Gentleman has suggested.
Anything else you wish to say? To any of the honourable members on the side on the amendment? I will put the question in terms of the amendment moved by the Honourable the Chief Minister. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. So I put the House has before it now, as I understand it, is the original motion. As amended. Does any honourable member wish to speak on the motion as amended?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As we already alluded to, the motion of the amendment to last year's motion meant that the act was never updated. And only, Madam Speaker, for the benefit of the House, I normally compare the proposed schedule. With all the new pension members to the announcement the Chief Minister made in his public speech for 2023, which is that they were up by 7%, and after then the last calculation and with the House some expert assurance that the members matched in terms of the percentage increase that was envisaged. Unfortunately, I think it's because of the commission. I have been unable to perform that task, so I can't do that comparison in terms of the increase. But that's not to say that the House were one in favour of the principle of it, but given the anomaly of the reason I can't actually compare that the members on the schedule, the proposed Gazette, that was attached to the original motion, that the represents the 7% increase as envisaged by the Chief Minister. In his budget address. Other than that, I'm not going to speak there. I expect to be the government going to change things that this will, the better motion, as it were, will cure the deficiency. Thank you.
I'll put the question in the terms of the motion proposed as amended by the Honourable Chief Minister. Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, another election year over, and a new speaker, new members of the House, so it's now incumbent on me to remove the adjournment at the end of another calendar year. Before I do, I'm delighted to be able to confirm that the individuals that Matt, who we were discussing earlier, have confirmed to the government that Flight 001 is cleared to land on the eastern runway on Gibraltar. Meteorological advice is positive on visibility and wind, and the children of Gibraltar will be delighted to hear that the enhancement of the airport for the arrival of Father Christmas is now a reality, and I can announce a staff agreement with Father Christmas. Other than that, Madam Speaker, I move that the House is now adjourned to no view.
I now propose the question, which is that this House is now adjourned to no view. I now put the question, which is that this House is now adjourned to no view. Those in favour? Those against? Pass. This House is now adjourned to no view.